The headlines: people hold rallies across the world to mark International Quds Day in solidarity with the Palestinian people. People in Tehran hold a funeral procession for the Iranian military advisors killed in an Israeli airstrike in Syria earlier this week. And also in our headlines, the UN Human Rights Council passes a resolution calling for Israel to be held accountable for war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza. Hello and welcome everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. People across the world have taken to the streets to mark International Quds Day as Israel continues with its genocidal war in the Gaza Strip. Protesters across Iran waved flags of Palestine and condemned the Israeli regime for its crimes in the besieged territory. Participants also slammed the U.S. for its support. For Tel Aviv, Iranians called on the international community to take action and stop the onslaught in Gaza. Protesters used the opportunity to highlight Israel's decades-long occupation of Palestine and called for its liberation. Rallies have also been held in other countries across the globe, including Tanzania and India. International Quds Day was established by the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, in 1979. It aims to maintain and raise awareness about the plight of the Palestinian people and their struggle. It's held on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan in most countries and on the last Sunday of the month in some countries. Fouad Izadi, university professor and political analyst, joined us earlier from Tehran. He says the 1979 revolution in Iran gave a new life to the issue of Palestine and raised it as the most important issue of the Muslim world.
This International Quds Day started right after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. You had a revival of the Palestinian cause with an Islamic perspective. And this is due to Iran. It's not due to any other country. And so Hamas was created. And this revolutionary spirit based in Islam started in Palestine. And that was the main contribution of Iran. And that is why International Quds Day is important. You know, in the last 6 months, we have had many organizations all over the world demonstrating about Palestine. In Iran, almost every week, we had demonstrations about Palestine. But this is the first International Quds Day after the start of genocide in October 7th. And that is significant because it's all about this day and what it's why it's significant, because it's basically reminds everybody about the role that the Islamic Revolution played in what we see today.
Political commentator Mohammad Marandi joined us earlier to share his thoughts on the reasons for the unwavering support the Iranian people have for the Palestinian cause.
The fundamental reason for Iran's support for the Palestinian cause is the same as why they supported South Africa and the resistance in South Africa. When the revolution happened, the first thing that Iran did when it came to foreign policy was that it immediately cut off ties with Israel, but it also immediately cut off ties with the regime in South Africa. People ask me, why is Iran supporting the Palestinian cause? And because of anti-Iranian propaganda, they think that this is Iran has some sort of self-serving agenda. I always remind them that if you go back and look at the statements and texts and speeches of the revolutionaries even before the revolution, the language on these issues was the same as it is today. The number one reason is that this is a humanitarian issue. It is a major violation of human rights. These are racist regimes, along with South Africa, ethno-supremacist regimes, and Iran as a religious state cannot do business, cannot legitimize either of those entities. Fortunately, one is now gone, but as long as the Israeli regime continues to exist, Iran cannot accept its legitimacy.
People in Tehran bid farewell to 7 Iranian military advisors killed in an Israeli airstrike on Iran's embassy in Syria. The funeral was held amid rallies to mark International Quds Day. The participants chanted slogans against Israel in a march ending at the University of Tehran. Following the funeral, the bodies will be sent to the hometowns of each of the deceased to be laid to rest there. On Thursday, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, held prayers over the bodies after they had arrived in Tehran from Syria's capital. The Israeli attack struck the consular section of Iran's embassy in Damascus on Monday. It took the lives of 2 senior Iranian military commanders and 5 accompanying officers who were on an advisory mission to Syria. Political commentator David Yaroyan joined us earlier to share his thoughts on the impact of the Quds Day rallies around the world. He said the demonstrations have united the global audience against imperialism, Zionism, and apartheid.
Thank you. I believe the significance of International Quds Day is both a recognition of the importance of remembering and upholding the ideals of Imam Khomeini and the Islamic Revolution, and as well, of course, primarily to demonstrate solidarity with the Palestinians in their ongoing resistance against Zionist apartheid and colonialism. So it affirms both the commitment to ongoing resistance against Zionism as well to the ongoing commitment to the ideals of the Islamic Revolution, which go hand in hand, primarily advocating Islamic unity as well as global unity. And so in this regard, this year's International Quds Day marches, which are truly going to be global, they've been expanding every year since 1980, will be yet another opportunity for members of the global community, as well as, of course, throughout the Islamic world, to demonstrate their ongoing opposition to Zionist colonialism, apartheid, and especially now what we see, the horrific daily war crimes and genocide against the Palestinian people.
The chief commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says Palestinians in Gaza will continue their resistance until they achieve final victory.
The message of Palestinians in Gaza is this. We have no problem to continue this resistance and continue fighting. Muslims should remain strong and united. We will defeat and bury the Israeli regime in Gaza.
Hossein Salami said Israel has no choice but to surrender and leave Gaza. He said the regime has suffered heavy political and economic blows and its collapse is near. The IRGC chief also slammed Washington's support for Tel Aviv, including vetoing several Security Council resolutions on a Gaza ceasefire. Regarding recent Israeli attack on an Iranian embassy in Syria, Salami warned that no action will remain unanswered. Our correspondent in Belfast, Dieter Reinisch, has also asked some people there about the event and its importance to the Palestinian cause. Let's take a listen.
I think that the Iranian government choosing such a symbolic day as the last Friday in Ramadan as Al-Quds Day and as a day of celebrating solidarity with the Palestinians really shows that solidarity with Palestine is their number one foreign policy priority and has been since the revolution. So I think that Palestinians, especially in these days in midst of war, starvation and genocide, will treasure this act of solidarity more than in any year before.
It is definitely genocide caused by the Zionists, definitely. And it didn't happen on the 7th of October. This has been going on for years. Israel, the Palestinians have been living in an open prison for years and years. And I think it's ridiculous that the West isn't seeing what's happening. Well, they are seeing it, but they're doing nothing about it. And that's what's so frustrating for the people to watch all these children, men, women, wee boys, not getting murdered.
I think it's absolutely disgraceful that the West acts like it does, that the West funds this terrorism. I call it terrorism because that's exactly what it is. It's been terrorism for the last 75 years in Palestine.
Of course it was. We're standing here in West Belfast in Ireland. We are all Palestinians. In our thousands, in our millions, we all need to be Palestinians so that from the river to the sea, that Palestine will be free.
Well, as we know, today marks International Quds Day, designated by the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, in 1979 to remind the world of the Palestinian cause. Our Yemen correspondent, Abdul Latif al-Mashali, has talked to people in Sana'a about the event and its importance in the Muslim world. Let's take a listen.
International Quds Day is a day when Muslims show their interest in the key issue of the Islamic world, which is Palestine, especially Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. For Yemenis, every day has become a Quds Day since the beginning of the Al-Aqsa flood operation. Al-Quds is in the hearts and minds of Yemenis, not only through the demonstrations, but also through missiles and drones that hit Israel's Eilat port and its maritime navigation.
International Quds Day represents the conscience of humanity in this time, full time of crimes. Al-Quds is the focus of resistance, and we must mark this day. This year's International Quds Day is very important since the Israeli war has claimed the lives of more than 32,000 Palestinians.
International Quds Day is considered a day of awareness for the Arab and Muslim nations to remind them of their central issue, which is Palestine. What is happening today in Gaza proves the importance of the Quds Day. The world must be reminded of the oppression against the Palestinian people and the hostility of the Zionist entity.
When Imam Khomeini designated this day, he made Palestine a pivotal issue for the Arab and Muslim nations by raising awareness on Quds. Palestine is the issue of Muslims, and Imam Khomeini designated the last Friday of Ramadan as Quds Day so that people could express their views about Palestine. He looked at the reality of Palestine and its wounds and pains and found that some nations had turned away from this cause, so it was necessary to remind them of Palestine.
Palestinians in Gaza are witnessing an unending spiral of death and devastation as the Israeli genocide in the besieged territory is now in its seventh month. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, Israeli attacks have killed 54 Palestinians and injured scores of others. In the past 24 hours, the latest victims have pushed the death toll to around 33,100, most of them women and children. The Palestine Red Crescent Society said on Thursday that about 1,000 kids in Gaza have lost one or both of their legs. Also, according to the UNICEF, 80% of schools in the Palestinian territory have been damaged or destroyed. The UN Human Rights Council has passed a resolution calling for Israel to be held accountable for war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Gaza Strip. 28 countries voted in favor of the measure. The resolution also demands a halt in all arms sales to Israel, highlighting warnings of genocide in its war on Gaza. It highlights a ruling by the International Court of Justice in January that there is a plausible risk of genocide in Gaza. This resolution marks the first time the top UN body has taken a clear position on the ongoing Israeli genocidal war on Gaza. Yemen's Mine Action Center has hosted an event commemorating International Mine Awareness Day, which is on April the 4th. The center held an exhibition showcasing remnants of internationally banned weapons used by the Saudi-led coalition in its war on Yemen. Abdul Latif al-Mashali reports from Sana'a.
Marking the International Mine Awareness Day, Yemen's Mine Action Center organized an event in the capital Sana'a. The main attraction was an exhibition displaying remnants of cluster bombs used by the Saudi-led coalition during its war on Yemen.
Last year and this year have been the most difficult times for the center, and the areas we have cleared during this period are very few. Only 25 fields have been cleared in the city of Hodeidah, specifically in the residential neighborhoods of Al-Hawak district. We suffer from many difficulties, including the United Nations Development Program stopping its support of the center and not finding alternative solutions. Unfortunately, the United Nations does not have a clear vision regarding the demining program, although reports indicate that donors allocated $64 million over the past year for demining purposes, but we do not see these amounts.
The center has laid charges against Saudi Arabia and its allies for deploying internationally prohibited weapons, including cluster bombs, throughout the prolonged war on Yemen. However, due to funding shortages, the center suspended its activities last July. In 2015, with backing from the United States, Saudi Arabia initiated a bloody military campaign in Yemen to restore a government aligned with its interests. This war led to the deaths and injuries of tens of thousands of civilians, among them women and children. In April 2022, the United Nations mediated a ceasefire, which has since been implemented, and negotiations between the warring parties have been ongoing. Throughout the seven-year war, the Saudi led coalition has used 15 types of internationally banned cluster bombs in its assaults on residential areas across Yemen. Therefore, officials emphasize that greater efforts are necessary to clear these unexploded munitions and mines throughout the country. Al-Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though.
Bye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In Britain, ministers are facing a revolt from their own Conservative MPs over plans to criminalise homelessness in the upcoming legislation. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Sky News has covered this story and tells us more. Rough sleeping could be fully decriminalised after 200 years on the proposals from rebel Conservative MPs to repeal legislation dating from the aftermath of the Napoleonic Wars. A group of Tory MPs working with UK's Labour and Liberal Democrat MPs want to strip out proposed and existing legislation that criminalises homelessness. The revolt is focused on government plans to introduce harsher policing of rough sleepers in its crime bill. Under proposals announced by the former UK Home Secretary Suella Braverman, police in England and Wales are to be given powers to fine or move on rough sleepers deemed to be causing a nuisance for the public. The move has infuriated MPs across the Conservative Party. Several dozen MPs are supporting proposals by Bob Blackman, the Tory MP coordinating the rebellion, to remove parts of the bill that criminalise rough sleeping and repeal the 200-year-old Vagrancy Act. The combined effect of these proposals, if passed, would be to fully decriminalise rough sleeping. The government has committed to repealing the Vagrancy Act of 1824, which was introduced to target wounded soldiers who began begging on the streets of England after returning from the Napoleonic Wars as homeless and destitute. However, ministers have yet to announce a date for the act to be repealed, and campaigners say that in its current form, the Criminal Justice Bill would go even further. According to the data collected by the local government expert Jack Shaw, almost 4,000 people have been arrested under the vagrancy laws in the 5 years to 2023. Conservative MP Bob Blackman said aspects of the proposed bill, under which rough sleepers could be moved on, fined up to £2,500 or imprisoned, were outrageous and worse than the Vagrancy Act. He added, "The police should assist people who are homeless to find somewhere that they can stay safely rather than arrest them and put them in a prison cell." Bob Blackman added, "What we've got to make sure of is that we consign the Vagrancy Act to the history book, not the statute book, and ensure that people are assisted to find somewhere to live." Nikki Aiken, the Tory MP for Cities of London and Westminster and a long-standing campaigner against the Vagrancy Act, said, "I've been working with Bob Blackman on the amendment and it's ridiculous to think that we should criminalise rough sleepers today. How are they going to pay their £2,500 fine? They need proper services addressing the reasons why they're on the street, not a criminal record." Downey, the chief executive of homelessness charity Crisis, said, "If these amendments pass, and they appear to have cross-party support from huge numbers of people in the Parliament, they would have the effect of finally moving on from 200 years of punitive and cruel interventions that stop people accessing the help that they need and punish them for their circumstances." On Monday, 1st of April, Kevin Hollenrake, a business minister, refused to say whether he supported the plans. He told Times Radio, "I believe that those things are not within my auspices. I'll be interested to see the legislation as it goes through Parliament and what the Prime Minister has planned." The Times, which first reported the story, said about 40 MPs had made it known to government whips that they would vote against the proposals to criminalise rough sleepers. The former Conservative leader Ian Duncan Smith and Damien Green, the One Nation caucus chair, are among those who have joined the rebellion. Critics say the legislation is so broadly drawn that someone could be considered a nuisance for sleeping in a doorway, being deemed to have an excessive smell, or looking as though they intend to sleep rough. Ministers are in talks with the rebels over a possible compromise before the bill returns to the House of Commons after the Easter recess. Alex Norris, the Shadow Policing Minister, said, "With soaring serious violence, plummeting charging rates and rock-bottom levels of confidence in policing, the Criminal Justice Bill was a chance to address crucial community safety issues. Instead, the government has chosen to go after homeless people or indeed anyone who smells. These are the twisted priorities of a government out of time." The Liberal Democrat MP, Leila Moran, said, "The heartless proposals in the Criminal Justice Bill risk bringing back the Vagrancy Act by the back door. The government should listen to their own backbenchers and take a compassionate approach to tackle homelessness, instead of stigmatizing and criminalizing those who sleep rough." The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. British ministers are facing a revolt from their own Conservative MPs over plans to criminalise homelessness in the upcoming legislation. Under proposals that form part of the British government's flagship crime bill, police in England and Wales are to be given powers to fine or move on rough sleepers deemed to be causing a nuisance to the public. The move has infuriated many Conservative MPs, about 40 of whom have warned whips that they will vote against the measure. Rob Blackman, the Conservative MP who is coordinating the rebellion, told The Guardian, "A lot of colleagues believe that the bill as it stands is completely unacceptable because it would have the effect of criminalising people who have no choice but to sleep on the streets. We are urging ministers to think again." The proposals form part of the Criminal Justice Bill, which is going through the House of Commons and is due to become law before the general election. They were announced by the former Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, and would give police and local authorities powers to act against nuisance rough sleepers in England and Wales. Rough sleepers could be moved on, they could be fined up to £2,500 or even imprisoned. Senior Conservative MPs on the left and right of the party, including the former Conservative leader Ian Duncan Smith and the One Nation caucus chair Damien Green, have signed amendments to the legislation to remove the plans to criminalise rough sleeping. Critics say the legislation is so broadly drawn that someone could be considered a nuisance for sleeping in a doorway, being deemed to have an excessive smell, or looking as though they intend to sleep rough. Kevin Hollenrake, a business minister, insisted the proposals were only one part of a wider government strategy to get people off the streets. Kevin Hollenrake claimed, "That's just part of the things that we're looking to do in terms of making sure that people don't sleep on the streets, and that's not right. We want to provide the resources for people, the housing, improving the number of refuges that people can sleep in, and the amount of social housing and affordable housing which we've done. The broad nature of the criminal justice bill has led MPs to use the legislation as an opportunity to attach other proposals, including banning conversion practices and decriminalising abortion in England and Wales.
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. Well, this is me, Asma. Once more, I have the pleasure to be at your service. And then here with me, I have two very dear guests. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Mustafa, and assalamu alaikum, Sister Nahid.
Wa alaikum assalam.
So, as the ritual of this program goes, I would love you both to introduce yourself pretty briefly. Let's start with Sister Nahid.
Assalamu alaikum to you and your dear listeners. My name is Nahid, and I'm so honored to be with you and your listeners today.
Thank you very much for being here, and your brother Mustafa.
My name is Mustafa, and I'm studying here in the Hauza. I'm studying psychology here, and I'm originally from Pakistan, but I've lived in different countries.
So, thank you very much, both of you, for coming here and for joining us in today's episode. So, you must have seen this quote somewhere that says, "We all are the bad guy in someone's story." And it's very interesting to think about it. Like, I'm a good person. I feel like I'm a good person. And I always try to be this very fully mannered and cool person toward everyone. But then eventually it's not going to be like the case that everybody is going to be satisfied with me. Like, no matter how good I am, but there is a person who would consider me as that negative role in their stories, in the course of their life. So, have you ever thought about it?
So, I really believe that we cannot please everyone. And even if, like, we have too many Nasreddin stories that he has talked about this fact.
That it's not by possible. The way, he's a fictional character in our literature.
Yeah.
This guy had a lot of stories in interacting with other people. Yeah, like whatever he did, really nobody meaningful. Was satisfied with him.
Yeah, exactly. The people were not pleased with him, and all the time he was just trying to make people happy. And the result
was shocked all the
time.
Yeah,
exactly. And the result was
no
the opposite.
No one is going to be satisfied.
Yeah, and I think like this is our life. It's a real clear sample of our own life. We cannot make all people happy, and even if we do everything to please all people around us, still there is one person who considers us as a negative character.
So you personally, you think that, is there anyone who would consider you as the bad guy?
Yeah, sure. I'm a teacher, and I have too many people who consider me as the negative character, but I think it's natural.
If you're a good teacher, then you're the good person.
If you want to be
the
strict teacher, it's so natural that some students may not like you.
You're a strict teacher.
Somehow.
Why are you strict?
And
you have to change yourself.
And it's natural that some people all the time are going to disagree with you or dislike you. Mm. But I don't think like this should not hurt us. This should not stop us from our own process, like our own way of improvement. And sometimes we should think about it. Sometimes, surely as human beings, we should evaluate ourselves and what
now,
we're doing
from
in
your
this world.
Student, I highly ask you to evaluate yourself and figure out that being strict is not the way to be a good teacher.
But it can help them improve faster.
I have my
why don't you do that through kindness?
My favorite teacher who I've learned the most from, like, I would say that he's like super strict. Like he's sometimes strict about certain rules and stuff, but overall, like, we all love him because first of all, he's a great teacher, right? He teaches really, really well. He makes us laugh in class, for example. And then he's like he's kind of flexible with us,
but
right?
But still, there may be one or two students that dislike that teacher as well.
Oh, come on, give up. We're asking you not to be strict.
I don't think there... You're right. There might be one or two people who don't like his like sense of humor.
You know, too many of my students are my colleagues these days. Like, they started with me and now they are working. So we have rapport within each other, but still, I'm not saying that I'm the best and nobody is going to dislike me.
Yeah.
I believe that I may be negative in someone's story.
Yeah, whatever. Just as the brother mentioned, the number of teachers that I love are very... they're not that much because the good teachers are very rare. They're just like diamonds. If you get one of them, then you're so lucky. Mm-hmm. But every single one of them, the criteria they have is modesty.
Yeah, sure.
And is kindness. And they're expert in what they do.
Yeah,
so I guess if you're an expert in what you do, then it's not needed for you to be strict. So this was just a side note to what we were talking about. Why then this case happens?
Probably in like my wife's story on the back. I know, hopefully I'm not. But, you know, joking aside, you know, we're all trials for each other, right? From a Islamic point of view, we all serve as trials for others. And interestingly, we have like, two verses of the Quran where one in which, you know, God says your spouse is a source of peace for you, you know. In another place, God says your spouse and your children are a source of trial for you.
They're the
word
test
fitna for you. Yeah. So you're both. You could be a source of peace, but at the same time, you're a source of trial. And yeah, you can definitely like take that role of being a negative person. And, you know, sometimes negativity isn't always because you're being bad. Like, for example, like me, like coming here to Iran, for example, you know I really ended up hurting my parents, right? Because they really miss me a lot. So in a way, I'm being like that negative person, right? But because I'm like causing them that kind of pain and hurt, I would say. But it's not always easy to, you know, sometimes you have to make those difficult decisions.
Your parents would, of course, understand your situation.
Yeah, yeah, they
but
understand
But when we
it.
Say the bad guy, like, I'm going to ask you this question as well, that who is considered to be the bad guy in your own story? Mm. But think about it, and then when we come after the break, you just tell me. Welcome back to Back to Reality. We're talking about an interesting topic, actually, which is the bad guys in our stories. And then I asked you about if you have ever been the bad guy in anyone's story. But then I'm going to cover up your perspective as well. Has anybody been the bad guy in your story? And how do you just recognize them? I mean, what are the characteristics of those bad guys?
You know, I guess the experiences are the things that shape our labels as bad guys or good guys, even for people. The experiences we have, the feelings that we get from people, and how they react, how they answer to our requests, needs, and wants.
Oh, no.
They shape.
No, it's not based on the answers to our requests.
You know,
see,
but they even, they
has
even
got
shape
a definition.
The experience. So that experience leads us to the way of labeling people as good or bad, you know? Imagine you once, I don't know, in a simple way, you wanted something as a child, and somebody didn't care about you, and that made you label that person as a person who's not caring and is the bad guy.
No, I would label them as inconsiderate. I would label them as guys who do not care about others, but I'm not going to label them as the bad guy in my story.
But it's not that easy for kids.
I hope you let go of it by now. That way you're getting older. But I would say that, you know, the people that I would label as bad guys are the people that have maybe lied to me. You know, that would be the common sort of denominator.
Yeah, right now as an adult, right?
In adult life, definitely as an adult. You know, anyone that I felt has lied or maybe, let's say, scammed me or, you know, been untruthful, I would consider those to be the bad guys.
Exactly,
you know?
Being untruthful. Just being the reverse of what I expected them to be. Like, they are having some masks of goodness when they are with me, but then eventually I come to understand that, no, I just was wrong about them. They were not good people. Like,
it's
they
strange.
Stabbed me in the back. They stabbed my, actually, trust in them.
Yeah, speaking of the topic in this way, I can say that the people who betray our trust are the worst. Mm-hmm. Like, they can be defined as the bad guy in my story.
So
as
have
well.
You ever betrayed the trust of anyone? Like consciously or unconsciously?
I don't know about the unconscious aspect. Maybe I have done it and I haven't recognized it even yet. But consciously, no. I have always tried to just keep the trust. Or, you know, I try not to trust unless I can make sure that I can fulfill it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I have done it unconsciously, but consciously, no. I haven't.
Yeah, it's way too much of a personal question. I feel like I'm on trial here.
So then if it's too personal, define goodness and badness.
Yeah, I would say one other. So lying, I said, would be one thing. The other one is maybe like rude behavior. If somebody's like rude to you, I feel those are like bad guys, you know?
We're not going to call them the bad guys in our life. They're rude.
Yeah, but that rudeness makes them the bad guys, you know?
The moment you understand or you recognize the fact that they're rude, you're not going to let them be important characters in your story.
Well, that depends, right? For example, I'll give you an example. Like, I was volunteering for an organization, mm-hmm. okay? And, you know, I'm not, like, the employee there. Like, I'm giving my free time, like, to help out there. But the person that was, like, leading that you know, organization, if I was, like, late sometimes, they would become really rude towards me, you know, despite me sort of, like, talking to them about
yeah.
it. When that happened, like, 4 or 5 times, I just stopped volunteering there. I was like, look, I don't need to volunteer. You're going to be this rude about, you know, over the smallest
yeah.
things. But that wasn't only my own experience. This person has done that with, like, 10 or 20 other people that I know, you know. So in that case, I consider that person to be a bad guy. Like, why isn't he learning from his own... Okay, I would say he would be a nice person if he learned from his mistakes, maybe. People who don't learn from their mistakes maybe are sort of bad guys, mm-hmm. you know. I'm willing to forgive someone if they're willing to change, but if they're not...
Yeah. Yeah, that will to change, and the feeling of regret is important factors. Like people who do not go through redemption, who do not go through regret, are scary people. They're so dangerous
yeah.
because they have no borders. And then just for the record to mention another point, it's not like always that the bad guys are the bad guys and you can recognize this badness. Like we see it in different movies. There are bad guys and you empathize with them. What you see clearly is not that they are bad. At the end of your story, you're going to recognize that these people had bad effects on you, like some of the friends that we have.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
We have some friends that we love them so much, but unfortunately, the much other people are telling us to be cautious, to be aware of the kind of people you're picking for your community. We do not pay any heed for it because we think that, okay, we are doing the right thing, and these guys, as I can see, apparently are good to me.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, what's going to happen is that they're going to change us through time without us being aware of it.
Yeah, that's
so sometimes the bad guys of your story are not going to be recognized as bad guys right at the moment. 2 or 3 years later, or even maybe more, you're going to understand that, okay, the monster that I'm becoming right now is the outcome of picking that person as my alter ego. So this is also another important thing to keep in mind.
That's what makes life challenging and like a dilemma. We never know if the person is an antagonist of our story.
Exactly.
Or is going to be the protagonist.
You come to the end of the story to recognize.
And then we realize mm-hmm. that person.
When you have no more of time to go back and change everything.
Yeah.
So, brother, your final words.
About
how to face these bad guys.
I mean, definitely, I would say... It's part of life, you know. We should realize that's natural part of life. And sometimes, by the way, you know, we all go through ups and downs. You know, our moods, for example, change a lot. Sometimes we do sort of become the bad guy, right? So if my mood is down, if I'm angry with my family, then I'm going to be that bad character. We have to recognize that in everyone. Like, everyone kind of goes through that stages in mm-hmm. life. And just take it naturally and, you know, rely on God and pray to God. and just understand that this is just part of life, you know, that you're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, this is part of life. Acceptance. And I have to mention this point as well, that there are some good characters, there are some bad characters, but according to me, right now I'm coming to understand that we're a mixture of both. Like, we could be both at different occasions and different times. So it just depends on the amount of badness you're going to share with the environment around you and the community that is encircling you. So this is all. Thank you, brother, and thank you, sister, and thank you to your listeners for staying with us until another session. I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
يا الله يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رايزك يا الله يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي Let the Ummah rise again, let us see daylight again, once again.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Ayahs, 30 days. A monotheist person not only reflects on the noble Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors, peace be upon them. Every faithful person too, according to the extent that they had learnt from the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, embarked on this heavy duty. So, the ulama or Muslim scholars took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job until present day. Today, this duty has become even more important due to the broad assault of the enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. The topic of the episode of the Ramadan special will be mistrust in the enemies. The ayahs that have been chosen in this regard are ayahs 112 and 113 of Surah Hud of the Holy Quran. So please stay tuned. Anyone who, with the intention of obeying Allah's order, fasts in daytime and relinquishes pleasures, even the halal, permitted ones, is indeed pursuing a lofty goal. He has decided to set himself free from the yokes of various desires, to let the spirit fly in the horizon of divine values. Freedom from the routine habits and yoke of despotic rules. This kind of freedom is the goal of all prophets, as the Holy Quran says. And certainly we raised an apostle in every nation, telling them, worship Allah and keep away from the rebels. This ayah clearly and decisively rules out worship of anyone other than Allah. In Islam, no one has the right to oppress and bully others. No one can subjugate others on the basis of his desires. Most human problems and miseries originate in miscomprehension of the reality of freedom or lack of resistance in its way. Therefore, those who fail to reach this comprehension and resistance accept the arrogance of others and flatter them. This increases their arrogance and rebellion, whereas Islam calls on the whole mankind to be humble only to Allah and those appointed by Him. The greatest contemporary exegete of the Holy Quran, Allama Muhammad Hussein Tabatabai, said that God is sensitive towards two sins in the Quran. One is usury and the other one is letting the enemies of Allah to rule over the Islamic community. The Almighty in Surah Hud of the Holy Quran, after the accounts of the nations of Prophets Noah, Hud, Saleh, Shu'aib and Moses, says in Ayah 112 of Surah Hud, "So be steadfast, just as you have been commanded, you and whoever has turned to Allah with you, and do not overstep the bounds. Indeed, He sees best what you do." But what does Allah mean by steadfastness? The next ayah gives the answer. "And do not incline towards the wrongdoers, lest the fire should touch you, and you will not have any friends besides Allah, then you will not be helped." By steadfastness, the Almighty stresses negation of inclination towards and relying on wrongdoers, since the least inclination towards them will make one share their fate. As for the nations of Noah, Hud, etc., it was only those who didn't incline towards wrongdoers who were saved. Interestingly, God does not say, "I will burn you if you go the wrongdoer." But He says that the wrongdoer himself is the fire. And in the end He says, "Then you won't be helped." It means that going to the wrongdoer will be of no avail and He will not help you. Allah tells all Muslims and freedom-seeking people not to accept the dominance of their enemies and the enemies of Allah. Enemies always intend to kill, harass and captivate others and wish them to become faithless. Yet, it is a matter of deep regret that Muslims, willingly or unwillingly, trust in enemies and lose everything including freedom and independence. Libya is a clear example of betrayal and breaching of covenant by the enemies. The last Libyan leader, Muammar Gaddafi, was put under severe pressure due to pursuing nuclear programs and numerous sanctions were enforced on the country by the United States and its complicit allies. The United States sometimes even resorted to invasion of the Libyan airspace in a bid to target Gaddafi's resistance. Finally, he delivered the information on the way of accessing nuclear equipment. In fact, Libya implemented all US demands only to see the removal of a few sanctions. But, at the same time, the CIA chief and the American envoy to Tel Aviv strongly opposed the removal of UN Security Council sanctions against Libya. Thus, every day, they forged new allegations against the country. In addition, the United States, in complicity with its permanent ally, Britain, forged popular mutiny in Libya to justify the ensuing aerial attack. Britain had been committed to defend Libya in case of any assault by a foreign country. Therefore, Gaddafi lost whatever he had, including his life, in trusting the enemy. The Islamic Republic of Iran has been successful in spreading its spiritual borders from Kashmir in the east to the Mediterranean Sea and deep into the Americas and Australia. In the beginning of formation of the Islamic rule in Iran, the enemy's top concern was to block Iran's way to barbed wire. But today, it has been shaken to its very core, with a fear of Iran's high-precision continental ballistic missiles. In 1979, the enemy, that is the United States, was worried about freedom of its spies in Iran, whereas today, when the best American military forces are taken as captive by Iranian soldiers, they start to weep while looking for adult diapers. Once, Iran needed missiles and rockets of other countries, but today, Iranian missiles determine the fate of wars in the region. The Islamic Republic of Iran, inspired and instructed by the Holy Quran and negation of trust in the enemy, has made great strides in science and technology, and great breakthroughs in science, such as in peaceful nuclear technology, nanotechnology, aerospace science, physics, astronomy, and many other areas of science. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar. a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. These are most beautiful days in the year. It's a month of Ramadan. We don't know how much blessings are going to be poured over on mu'mineen, on faithful ones. There's a beautiful hadith from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam where he says, لَوْ يَعْلَمُ الْعَبْدُ مَا فِي رَمَضَانَ لَوَدَّ أَنْ يَكُونَ رَمَضَانَ السَّنَةِ. If mu'min would know that how valuable Ramadan is, this month is, they would love to have this month for whole year. Sometimes we think Ramadan is kind of some kind of barrier in our in achieving our lustful life, in achieving our pleasures. But it is, in fact, it is not. Ramadan itself is a pleasure. For those who know truly what Ramadan is, Ramadan means you entered into the territory of or you enter into the special ceremony of God, and God is host, and where you are a special guest, where you are a special guest, and you are all blessed in the normal days, in the regular days. When you're eating, there's no reward for you. When you're sleeping, there's no reward for you. Just regular life moving on. But in the days of month of Ramadan, you are a special guest to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's why Rasulullah said, لَوْ يَعْلَمُ الْعَبْدُ مَا فِي رَمَضَانَ. If a true servant of God would know what contains Ramadan this month, what has this month in 30 days for you, you would love to have this Ramadan for whole year. You wanted to have this Ramadan for maybe for entire your life, because when you enter into month of Ramadan, you are a special guest to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And in the Ramadan, Iblis, or in another sense, Shaitan, is chained and jailed. In other days, Iblis works on ourselves. He gives us bad thoughts, you know. Lots of things. Shaitan is trying to take you towards nonsense, towards sinful world, towards making certain types of sin. But in this month, you're going to have less temptations. Why? Because Iblis is chained. He is kind of locked, and you are more safe. You are more protected. You are more attentive to the guidance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And you have to achieve this level. To a mu'min, a true mu'min is going to keep this quality in him permanent, or forever, for eternal. Because when Iblis is chained, you are going to receive less temptations, less temptative thoughts. So you are more safe. You are more with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And it's a good sign. So if mu'min would know that what Ramadan has for him, he would love to have this month as a year, not only for 30 days. Because those who know the value, the true value of Ramadan, 30 days for them is less. Awliya always love to fast. Most of the Urafa and Awliya, they would continue Ramadan after 30 days. They won't stop. May Allah give us tawfiq to understand the true meaning of Ramadan, inshallah ta'ala. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The Israeli regime has shown that it is not interested in reaching a ceasefire deal, as announced by Hamas's senior rep in Lebanon, Osama Hamdan. One reason would be since it would prevent the genocidal aggression and the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from continuing. Is this what Israel is after? Does the targeting of aid and aid workers also support that? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how the Israeli regime is doing all that it can to